Thank you for listening to the CPA Trendlines podcast, a production of CPATrendlines.com, now available on iTunes. CPA Trendlines presents a production of the Center for Accounting Transformation.
Hello and welcome to Transformation Talks. I'm your host, Donnie Shimamoto, the Inspiration Architect for the Center for Accounting Transformation. During these episodes, we'll be visiting with a spectrum of firm practitioners who are successfully helping their firm navigate the transformation of the accounting profession. Today with me are Glenn and Julie from Harper & Company, and they're going to share with us some of the transformations that their firm has gone to. And Glenn and Julie, welcome.
Thank you for having us on. We're really excited.
Thanks for having us on, Don. I appreciate it.
I actually am thankful that you came on because I was listening to your podcast and I was like, oh, I like this advice that they're giving. And then I heard you guys talking about what you've done in your firm and how you've changed stuff up. And I was like, oh, this is perfect. So come help share that, because part of what we, I think, don't hear enough is firms that are successfully doing everything that all the consultants and thought leaders and, you know, thought leaders and everybody's telling them. And that's part of what we're trying to do through this podcast, is really help show the advice works. You need to do it. And so actually with that, let's kind of go back. Can you tell us a little bit about yourselves, your role in your firm, and tell us a little bit about your firm too? Because I like that you guys are a smaller firm, because I think a lot of firms think, oh, this is for big firm stuff. So tell us a little bit about yourselves and your firm.
So I start with me, because I'm just a skosh older, so I've been doing this a little bit longer. But you know, I came out of college and I had, you know, bright eyes to be a partner in the Big Eight, because that's when it was around. I got that inspiration from a guy I worked for. I was his landscaper. He was a managing partner of a firm in Cleveland, one of the Big Eights. And I'm like, man, I don't know what you do for a living, but that's what I want to do. And I didn't know what an accountant did. I was a farm kid. And so I went to school and this is what I want to be. But apparently you need this thing like a 4.0 to get in, a grade point average to get in a firm like that. So while I was in college, I worked for a guy that just started a firm. And I came on board while I was in school working for him. I'm like, wow, this is pretty cool. And so by the time I got out of college, I'm like, you know, this is going pretty well. I didn't have the grades to get into the Big Eight at the time. So we kind of started this thing off and we were just a compliance firm. Didn't even know what that meant, but we basically, people would call up and we do work for them, right? Just bill by the hour or the project, whatever it was, and just started from zero and just made this thing kind of go pretty good. And then ultimately I got the CPA, became a partner, and we kind of just kept grinding it out, doing the work. And then at some point I'm like, this is crazy. I'm working way too hard. I'm kind of feel like I'm in this own little silo, billing all this work, working many hours. And I'm like, there's got to be a better way. And then I looked at, well, what are my clients doing? What are they doing that's making them successful? And then I realized that most of my successful, you know, mid-sized firms, meaning, you know, greater than 8 people working for them, they all had one thing that was really cool, that they had a practice manager or a COO of some sort that basically did operations and had the glue to help the workers, the support team, kind of hold that together and help deliver that message to the client. I'm like, that's what I need. So I put the word out, you know, we called them assistants at the time. And you're like, that's not what I need. I need somebody that can take ownership in this. And so ultimately, you know, I kept asking around, does anybody know anybody? Anybody know anybody? And, you know, Julie came to the door and I knew I couldn't sell it for my partner because he didn't think we needed that, but I knew we needed it. So I said, look, I'm going to hire, quote, my assistant. But I told Julie, I said, look, you're ultimately going to be the practice manager, but right now I got to do it this way. And so that's what I did. And that just started down the path of, you know, Julie brought to the attention some education and training of how to transform a firm from a transactional firm to more of a relationship and value billing firm and really help solve clients' problems proactively versus just being, you know, a tax sweatshop. And so, you know, I'll let Julie take over from there to say what had happened and then I'll chime in again.
Yeah. So my experience is a little bit different. So I had that corporate America leadership experience and, you know, I had kind of decided after having, you know, my first child that I wanted to take a step back and wanted to really, you know, how can I create some balance? And, you know, Glenn, somehow met Glenn through, you know, a different colleague. And, you know, we didn't agree on all the things in that first interview. Our views were very, very different.
It was way different. I'm like, look, the two things that are most important to me is you got to be to work on time.
And that's the number one thing I'm never going to do for whatever reason. That's a whole different podcast. But, and so ultimately decided, you know, to come on board and see what we could do together. And I think as we went through this and I could see, you know, I think the second day I closed the door and was like, what is going on in here? This is not a business. You know, what's happening? And I, as my experience has grown through this, you know, there's a lot of firms, there's more firms doing what Glenn's was doing than what we're doing now. And I think as we've went through this, the passion, you know, we always talk about on our podcast, how you find your passion and it's in the most unlikely way is, you know, I've seen that how firms are running their firms and how they can just tweak some things and change their mindset and be a little bit more open-minded and hire maybe this position and really be able to transform what they're doing and maybe not do what Glenn did for 25 years. And so that's really where I came in and kind of had that fresh perspective of this is what I know works. How can we change that? Our firm is only 12 people. And so how can we really, you know, make these small incremental changes and be very strategic about what we're doing to really change and drive that difference?
So for me, it was like, I'm like, hallelujah, this is it. High five, because I knew that I was just...
It wasn't that easy, just it so was, we're clear.
I knew what I needed. I just didn't know how it worked, and we put it together. And it was a lot of tough conversations, but I recognize that most accountants run their practice of just doing compliance, and they don't run it like a business. And you're advising, the accountant is advising their hundreds of thousands of clients, hundreds and thousands of clients on how to run their business and build a business and be the best they can be, how to set it up, how to do the taxes, how to solve conflicts and put in management and teams. We do it for all our clients. We never do it for ourselves. And so, because we just don't think we need to, right? Which is absolutely asinine, because of course we need to do it. And so once you recognize that as a firm owner, as a CPA firm, like, wait a minute, we are not a sweatshop. We're better than that. We bring more value in that. We know too much. We want to help our clients more. But to do that, we can't do it unless we're running a business. And that's, we need systems and processes. And Julie,
I think to paint the picture of what I kind of walked into it, and it's, I think it's common in a lot of firms, we're three silos. There were literally one company running three different companies with three different expectations, three different ways of doing things. You know, the admin team was very confused on, you know, whose expectation really ruled, who, what was the priority, how do we do things? There was zero culture going on internally. And if anything, you know, it was kind of a toxic culture, if I could be, you know, as blunt as saying that. And so that happens in a lot of firms. And so how are you able to kind of bring everything together to for everyone to work for a common goal? And I think you see burnout a lot. I think you see a lot of people, a lot of high turnover when you have that inside a firm. And so it's, how are you able to kind of go in and change that so that it's a proactive approach rather than a reactive? You know, if you interview a lot of firm owners, they're just drinking from a fire hose
all day long.
They don't know how to turn the lever to be able to control that and set different expectations. And so that's really our journey and what we kind of set out to do. And I think we've been pretty successful in doing that. And so, you know, now it's, you know, how do we share that shortcut with the world?
Nice. Glenn, I totally agree with you too. I feel like firms are always the cobbler's children, right? Like, we tell all our clients to do stuff and then we never do it. Even my firm, we recognize that we were doing that too. So we're in the process of actually optimizing our own internal way that we operate and going through a lot of that change as well. Julie, you mentioned the three different ways of doing things. Is that effectively three partners or three different partners in the way that they wanted stuff, or?
You know, when I started, Glenn had another partner, and then there was another, you know, what I would call an accountant in charge who had been there for a while, who had her own way, right? And so it was literally three separate silos of people who had figured out a way that worked for them. And no one had ever had come together and had a conversation of like, okay, well, if we take your strength and we take this strength, well, no one's weakness is ever exposed.
And the point of that is that we each were kind of doing things our own way, and we put ourselves, each of us, above the firm. And we cannot be a CPA cannot be successful on their own in this environment. You could be a sole practitioner and do just great, right? You're going to be busy, but to achieve your greatness, you have to delegate tasks and things that you shouldn't be doing, the things that bring you value. And you'll figure that out as a business owner anyway. But as an accountant, you can't do it on your own. And if you're not, you have to rely on your team. And if to do that, you have to put the firm above you, and you have to put the well needs of all your staff and the only way you can do that is they have to be the same message, doing the same thing for all the clients the same way. So the client gets a better experience. You know, a client would call and they would get, you know, they have the same answer, but it would be three different ways and it would be a different spin. We're going to get probably the same result. We're just going to get there differently. And then if the client calls up 2 days later and talks to somebody else, they're like, well, they said to do it this way. We're still getting the same result. It's just a different path. And that was confusing for everybody. And the admin team, again, they were lost because they didn't know which way to go.
So Donnie, to speak to kind of Glenn's, you know, comment earlier, is there was no purpose in the firm. No one had been able to define what was the vision, what was the mission, what are the core values when it comes to decision making, our purpose, you know, where are we going, what are our goals? And so I think once, you know, you're able to kind of sit down and define those and communicate those very transparently to your team, and everyone can understand how they fit into something bigger than themselves, you're going to see your culture shift. Because now everybody understands where you're going, what you're doing, and how they fit into it. And again, it takes time and it's tough conversations. I mean, I can assure you, Glenn and I get along just great, but there were times behind closed doors where we didn't agree. But I can assure you that as soon as we opened the door and we walked out, we were a very united front, whether or not we were, you know, using some resemblance of what both of us believed or one of us had been able to compromise, whatever that was, we were a very united front. Because as you go to execute change inside a firm, if there's any cracks, any negativity, anything like that, the team just latches onto that. But if there is nothing but positivity and you're leading from a place of, you know, moving forward and this is what we're doing, and it's very clear and very defined, people want to hook up their wagon and go. And the people that don't, that's okay. And I think that's a really hard thing for whatever reason, this industry to understand, that you don't necessarily look at your firm today and it's the firm you want. And that's okay. You just have to be able to make progress towards that.
Accountants, you know, we're just a different breed. I mean, we are just programmed differently, not as bad as engineers, but we are bizarre individuals because, again, we care so much about our clients and we want to do good. We want to do well for them. We want to help them. And we really never think about our firm. We don't think about ourselves because we're so busy trying to service that client. And the client's getting tremendous effort and value and passion. And we care almost too much as an accountant because we know everything. We want to help. It's in our nature. But you really can't do that if everybody isn't on board. And as an accountant, to change something, it's like, well, what do we do? Well, what did we do last year? That's what we're doing this year. It's really hard to say, let's blow this up and even just change one degree. Like, I mean, we're you know, the act of Congress. We got to move glaciers with that. It's really hard to do that. But once you recognize that to adapt and overcome those obstacles and to be a better firm, you got to rip some things apart and rebuild it. And you just have to have an open mind because literally every accountant out there, we do this on a daily basis for probably 5 to 10 clients a day. I mean, this is what we do all day long. Why can't we do it for ourselves? And that was the whole impetus of this change of like, I know we can be better than this. Why aren't we? And we needed a couple of those tweaks. And, you know, Linda Julie came along, that really helped make that happen.
Nice. Yeah, I totally agree with you because, you know, we do a lot of business transformation consulting. And a big piece of what we do is, you know what, start with a blank sheet of paper. If you were creating the firm today, what would it look like? Don't think about what you're doing now. If you created the firm today, what would the firm look like? And then we use that as the basis for, let's create this vision and move you along that vision. Now, I think the interesting thing that Julie brought up on this, though, is this whole need for purpose, because that's not something that we talk about with accountants. Like, why are we here? We're here. Aren't we here to just do tax returns and deliver financials? And I heard Glenn kind of allude to some of it, too. So what do you guys see? Like, how did you guys figure out this purpose for your firm?
I mean, I definitely think the purpose came to fruition about, you know, just having the conversations transparently and honestly. And Glenn hit the nail on the head. He wanted to help people. And so how do you help people? It's through relationships. So how do you create a firm that's solely based on relationships and service and move away from that transactional relationship almost, right? It's a value-driven relationship. And so that's really where it all started.
And, you know, the part that gives us great perspective when we go talk to other firms about doing this is that, you know, in the firm I was with a partner and different accountants in charge and doing whatever we were doing, you know, I had a different value proposition of how I was billing and what I was doing for clients, and everybody in the firm was doing something totally different. Well, how can we give something away with one person, but yet I'm charging, or, and then it's not being equitable and the client's basically using and abusing the accountant and the other owner, right? And they don't even realize it. And I'm like standing in the back going, wait, no, we should do this different. But you can't get people to come with, because at the time I didn't have the glue to put that together and how to work that. So when we go and talk to other firms, usually there's the partners are on different tracks. We got the old school and we got the young person or whatever we have, and it's just different. And bridging that communication gap to say, look, if you're the older partner, things are changing fast and you can adapt to. And if you don't want to lose everybody, you better adapt. And the younger partner you're looking at is another situation where how do you recognize and be, I don't want to say empathetic, but sympathetic to, hey, this is the guy that, or the guy or the gal that started everything, and they've been through the trenches for 30, 40 years. You got to give them a little grace and help work through them, but they got to recognize that they want to change as well. You know, that the older partner to get to that work. And if not, guess what? It's going to blow up anyway. So the sooner you can recognize it, the better off you are. But it's, again, accountants is so hard to change. I mean, it's, we don't like confrontation. We don't like change. I mean, the stereotypes are real. I mean, if I had a pocket protector here, you'd be like, high five, Glenn. But
he's got a 10 can in his backpack.
Don't worry. I got one right over here. I'm ready. Okay.
But I think that's where this kind of role comes into play of really trying to, there's no necessarily emotion. And I know that sounds so harsh and so cold, but we just want to run a really good business and we want everyone to come with, and we want everyone to understand where we're going. And so to be able to bridge that gap of communication and empathize a little bit and to help control and make people accountable to those items is really, really important in order to gain traction.
And to that point, you know, we have this awareness as the owner, like, I know there's a better way to do this, but again, then you get the decoder ring and you're like, oh wow, that sounds awesome. Can I know, well, how the heck do I do it? I don't have time for this. I don't have a skill set for that. So when you locate, we call her the Julie, right? Now you have somebody that can bridge the communication gaps. You got somebody that understands the operations a little bit, you know, way better. And they can be the buffer. It's the skosh. And then they can have the ability to be the buffer. So I don't have to be in a position where I'm talking to staff and I'm just not trained in that. That's just not what I do. So she can decode what I'm saying and what they're saying and make it so we can communicate. And it was like, oh, all right, I see what's going on here. And then, oh, and this is how we're going to do it. And I can take everything in my head, dump it out into a process. That was like getting hooked up to the machine in The Princess Bride, where they just sucked everything out of my head and put it in a process, because it was all up here. It wasn't where the rest of the firm could see it. And that process, that was tedious, I got to tell you. But once it was out there, I'm like, why am I hoarding this knowledge? Why can't I share this with the whole firm and make everybody better so they don't come and talk to me all the time? So the Julie helps facilitate that change and put that new system in place where I don't have to be the one doing it. And I mean, that was life changing for that.
There's a lot in there. I want to call out three specific things because I think they're so important. One, Glenn, you talked about this need, especially this split kind of between the, I'm going to call them the veteran person in the firm, mm-hmm. and newer person in the firm that wants to do things the new and different way versus the quote traditional way. And I heard you first started going down that path. And I was like, oh, please don't set them against each other. Cause I hate it when people do that. They're like, oh, this generation wants that and that generation wants that. And these are separate. But I heard you say they actually need to meet in the middle and understand where each other is coming from. And I totally agree with you on that. In fact, I think I wrote an article on CPA Trendlines about that, like this need to meet in the middle and understand the value of each other's perspectives. And I totally agree with you too, that it's part of the, you can't change someone that doesn't want to change. So there needs to be that understanding that, hey, we are going to go through this change. And both of you said earlier, maybe that's a discussion, argument, whatever, behind closed doors. But once we've got an agreement on this is the way we're moving, this is the way we're going to move.
Donnie, to that point, the key thing that the younger person forgets, and that's why I said you have to do it with grace, is because there is so much wisdom in the elder partner because they've been through it all. They've seen the crazy situations that the young person hasn't experienced yet. It's not that we can't figure it out, but what I got to go look up and take 3 days to figure out and hope it works, right? Because I'm going and I got to reinvent it. The elder partner goes, you just do this, this, and this. They're like, oh my God, that's genius, right? So what you don't want that wisdom to walk out the door. So it's important that you do put that together, and the energizing and the passion of the younger person that hasn't been beat down for 40 years, right? And just got destroyed, the abused CPA, the older one needs to tap into that energy so they can live out the last few years in glory as they fade off in the sunset instead of having it to be ugly. And you just don't want that. But sometimes it happens. But to your point, it's about the wisdom. Everybody has something to offer. You don't let either one walk away.
Yeah. So important. Completely agree with you. And then the second thing you mentioned was the introducing the Julie or the COO or the practice manager, whatever they want, for even firm administrator. I know a lot of people use that, but I think the Julie role is a little different than kind of the traditional firm administrator, right? So I think, like you said, that's a super important one too. My firm, we're 14 people. And actually, even when we were 8 people, we still had our Julie, our person, actually, his name is Elisa. So she was kind of my counterpoint too, a lot more structured, a lot more operations focused, a lot more direct. Also, I think I heard you kind of say that. And that's really, you need that because that's the person that kind of puts all the glue together that says, hey, this is what has to happen and keeps things going, which allows us as the partner to kind of do what we need to do, work with the clients, work with the staff, be that more creative individual that's like, okay, this is how we're going to approach everything, or this is what has to happen because of the wisdom that we have and actually experience in delivering the services.
Yeah, I think that Julie role, again, historically you would just call it a firm administrator or whatever, but they never were given, you know, from
I really like to be called the barista.
I mean, you don't even make coffee. So I don't know if that would work, but it comes down to the firm administrator is somebody that you assigning tasks to, but you've not empowered them and trusted them to own it.
Ooh,
to
I love
own
that
catalyst of change and to be the go-to person and take that ownership, because it's so hard to delegate something if you still control it. So once you empower and delegate and trust, then you can not forget about it, but it's not on my plate anymore. And that's what I think most firms were lacking, because accountants just, we can't give up control. God forbid, you know, we don't have our hands in everything. Well, it's very enlightening and empowering when you do that, because then they take that role and they go with it, because all you're doing is you still have the same job and you're holding somebody back from being the best they can be. Well, how does that help you? It doesn't.
Well, and I want to know how many, you know, firm owners have went to conferences and been so energized by what they see and they're going to do it. They're gung ho and they get back and they're just dragged down by the tasks that have to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the difference is this person isn't necessarily, you know, bogged down by those tasks, by the fire hose, whatever you want to call it, and can just integrate what needs to be done and they're doing it. That is their purpose. And they're doing the purpose of the firm owner, the firm, and they just, everyone's holding everybody accountable, right? And so it's putting everybody up for success.
And don't forget, the accountants were just guilty, 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 guilty.
Glenn loves stereotypes, by the way.
Because they're so true. It's like, we'll take and we'll hire a receptionist, and eventually we'll say, hey, can you do this one little task? And, oh, hey, by the way, can you run some payrolls? And, hey, can you just do some basic bookkeeping? Just type this data in and get me some things. And next thing you know, you got somebody who got hired in to do X is now doing Y. And then all of a sudden you're like, hey, would you be my practice manager? They didn't want that. And furthermore, sometimes we might take an accountant and make them a practice. That's not what they do. So the Julie and Julie, like, you, I get very, I bought her a 10 key for her birthday 1 year and she still hasn't opened it up. Like, she is adamantly no numbers, no accounting, no tax work. And I'm like, come on here. But
isn't it offensive that I got a 10 key for a birthday gift?
I was just thinking that in my head. I said, oh my gosh, poor Julie.
I think that was a great gift because I was
so proud of himself. And I'm like,
I'd go to her desk and she'd ask a question or something, and she has this little solar calculator. I'm like, I'm ready to throw that thing out the window. So I got you a nice 10 key so I can use it when I show up at your desk. But the perspective of a non-accountant is imperative because they're not looking at it like an accountant. They're looking at it like as a practice manager or a COO. And that's a whole different skill set. So when you search for your Julie or that operations person, you don't want it to be an accountant because that's not going to work for you.
Yeah, completely agree with you on that. So we use Berkman personality assessments as part of our hiring process. And in Berkman terms, the Julie is a yellow person. It's someone that's very structured, which actually is usually an accountant, but it's a different type of skill set as well in it. So in Berkman, it's a mix of yellow and red. Red is like action and things happen. And that's what that is compared to us as accountants. We're normally kind of yellow, bluish. Blues is a lot of ideas and things. And most of us that are firm owners and actually true entrepreneurs are more in that blue yellow rather than the red yellow.
So what I am.
Different personality.
We haven't taken that one, but we've taken several because I think the other thing that people have trouble with or is a roadblock is these two people communicating.
Mm. Being the Julie and the owner. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I was, I'm like,
this is funny.
With all kinds of people and I know how, I know how to speak the speak. And one day we were just having a conversation and it may have been a discussion rather than a conversation. And I said, I need you to go online and take this test because I don't know how to communicate with you. We are not speaking the same language. Like, whatever you're saying, I'm not hearing. What I'm saying, you're not hearing. And
all I hear is blah, 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 blah.
He's like, I don't need to take a personality test. I'm like, I'm not having this conversation until you do so. And so he does it and he comes out and puts it on my desk. And I'm like, oh, this makes so much sense.
I still don't know what it really means when I took the test, but it made sense to her. So she knew how to communicate.
And so then I was like, okay. So I came back in. I'm like, okay, I'm going to approach this from a different angle here. And we've been, we still have our discussions, but it's interesting how once you're able to kind of put your finger on that and communicate effectively back and forth, it changes the whole dynamic.
Completely, completely. I mean, whether it's Myers-Briggs, DISC, pick your poison on that one, but just make sure they do that comparative because that's what I know DISC and Berkman does this where you can actually compare and say, okay, how does A person A communicate with person B and how does person B communicate with person A? And you need to adjust your language on that. But that's so important to have kind of that data to also give accountants speak that data and that understanding because we also need to do that with clients. That I think is really important to recognize what type of communication your client needs. And then that's how you adjust the message to really help get them to the right decisions.
But what's funny about that. And again, stereotypes are great. As an accountant talking to a client, I know instantly how to communicate with them. I just know how they roll. Like we just can sense it. But when we look at our own firm and our people in our firm, we don't look at it like that. We're like, hey, this is how we do it. And it's not the case. So again, the life-changing aha moment is when you recognize that you're applying one thing one way, but you're not doing it the other way. And that is actually holding you back.
Mm, important. And yes, before I forget, the third thing that I want to really pull in is you mentioned this whole, and we actually came up really early, standardization and the need to actually look at stuff. So we've done research in the past on how do you actually do automation and outsourcing. And the key to automation, one of the keys, that we actually identified 8 keys, but one of the keys is standardization of processes. And Jillian, you mentioned a lot of that's in your head. And early on, it came out like we had 3 different people with 3 different processes that were driving, you know, what the staff did, and it kind of drove them crazy. So how did you guys approach kind of this whole standardization? Because I do think that that is one of the keys. And, you know, my firm does it, but not everyone will hire us to do it. How did you guys go through it? Is there a technique or advice that you can share?
Well,
I wouldn't start with Glenn. No. I think for us, and I think I found it to hold true in most firms, the admin staff are the most likely to buy into that really fast. And so you start with one thing. So when I started, we had 0. So I started with one thing and I empowered one person to document how they did that process. And then I empowered another person in the firm that was going to own getting these processes standardized and put them in a shared place. And then I had that person that created the first one present it in a staff meeting to the rest of the team. And so it became, now that person is the go-to for whatever that is, right? They're going to own that. And so we literally started, and it was like a fire hose, right? As soon as you start one, they just start going. The hardest people to get to document what they do, the accountants. Interesting, right?
It's so stereotypical.
But you have to hold them accountable. And I think the great thing about doing this is, you know, we would take one accountant and say, hey, can you build the chart of accounts that would be the perfect chart of accounts for Harper & Company? And you're going to present that on Monday at the staff meeting. What it did is it created conversation too. Mm. So they would get up there and present it, and there'd be, you know, 12 of us total in this room having this conversation, including the admin, because I think it's really important that everyone understands everyone's role. And so the conversation would start with, well, what about this? And did you think about that? And why didn't you do that? And it was everyone's different perspective coming together. And then you empower that person to go take kind of everyone's perspective and tweak it to make it the Harper & Company way. And so I think that the conversation creates great culture. And it also creates everybody thinking, oh, you're right. Why haven't we been doing that shortcut altogether? So the conversations that are created are invaluable. Like the value in those are incredible. But now that person's in charge of changing the chart of accounts for Harper & Company if we so choose. And so it takes all of that out of the firm owner's responsibility. And now I've spread it evenly amongst the team and it's documented. So when you go to hire, how much easier is that process?
And I think that goes to the thing, which was the hardest part is, you know, ultimately, you know, the firm kind of split up and partner and another one had to go their own separate ways. Because again, either, you know, you can't make somebody do something that they don't want to do because you believe it to be a certain way and they believe it to be another way. At some point, it's better to do it sooner than later and just say, look, this just isn't going to work and it's okay. So you take your ball and you go over there. I'm going to take my ball and go over here and we're going to do what we're going to do. And either people are on board or they're not. And that's the hardest thing for an accountant because we think that everybody should do it our way, right? And it's really not like that, right? It's what's the firm way we're going to do it. It's not my way. It's what's the firm way. What's the best for the whole team? And then you can't have a squeaky wheel. You can't have somebody that's not doing it right. And if everybody's doing it the same way with purpose, well, you're going to be just fine, but you're going to lose some along the way. And that's okay. Cause it's, again, it's better to know sooner than to find out later. And so you put those people and put those things in place as soon as you can, because then you know quicker.
I love it. I love it. And I love that you talked about empowering and getting the staff to actually drive the change. We believe in that too. We believe in high stakeholder involvement where everyone kind of gets a say. Maybe one person is a leader, another person's a lead, but everyone starts to get a say because the traditional thinking is, well, it's Glenn's firm. Isn't Glenn going to tell us how he wants it done, right? Or even there's a Julie. Julie's going to tell us what we need to do, which then when there's problems, they're like, well, Julie said we got to do it this way, or Glenn said we got to do it this way. So I'm not going to raise the issue because that's what they said. And but by getting everyone in, it also empowers everyone to say, hey, there's a problem, or we have this new situation. How do we adjust this, right? And create that conversation.
And I think that drives culture, which is something that I'm, you know, fiercely protective of inside of our firm. But it creates a culture where there's a teamwork aspect to that. And Glenn and I are just leadership. We are not bosses. We don't dictate. We don't ever want to be in that position. We want to listen. And I think when you stop and listen to what everybody on your team is saying, you're going to be able to create something way bigger than the firm owner.
And remember, as the owner, you know, the way I did it way back when, I had green bar paper, I had the fold-out depreciation schedules and slide rules.
You're dating
and
yourself.
But I'm just saying that's how I used to do it. Well, I'm not doing that work anymore. Somebody else is. So the way I did it is not the best way to do it. And I have to be willing to accept that somebody is in the trenches doing it. Their opinion on how that works or should work is probably valid. And then we just got to get a consensus to all the people doing the similar work, which is the best way. But it isn't the way I did it because it's not like that anymore.
Well, right? And I think, you know, you think, okay, I don't even know how many, I lost track of how many processes we have documented now internally, but going around and listening and having conversations with people, you know, I say I spend the majority of my day listening. We're now going through and redoing some of those processes because they've changed, they've evolved. The firm's changed, the industry's changed, the software's changed, whatever that is, it's changed. And it's so interesting to sit down and listen to those, you know, they'll be like, you know, I think I read this and I just think it's changed. And, you know, and I'm like, I'm all ears. I'm open to whatever change you think is good. We just have to make sure it's good for the whole firm. And so when you go through that and you listen and you change, you know, I feel like we are constantly able to pivot, evolve and change inside of our firm because we're very open-minded in regards to having those conversations.
You know how great it is? As the owner, to not be responsible for every single new change in the tax code or system or process or program or whatever. And instead, your team is bringing you, you're not bringing me, I always said, you know, the hardest part about being the leader or the owner is people always bring you problems, right? I don't want any more problems. I want people to bring me solutions. So you identify the problem, bring me some solutions. Now bring me two or three solutions and I'll help you pick the best one, but just don't dump the problem on my desk. How's that help me? Right. So this
I don't even think you see problems anymore.
It's fantastic. But no, I mean, ultimately if it gets to my desk, it's a real thing, but the goal of having the Julie and running it that way is to make people be engaged in a way that they can make an impact. And they are going to held be accountable because now that guess what? You might get lucky in your new thing you thought of or that solution, it's adopted for the whole firm. So now it's their reputation. So now they got to make sure it's right. And it doesn't have to be me every time. And that is incredibly empowering for everybody.
So important. I completely agree with you on that. Definitely. Yeah, they need to own it. It's then there's accountability. And I love that you brought in that reputation. I hadn't thought about that, that now there's a reputational impact for the person that's doing that. And so it creates, again, kind of that ownership. And I'm going to make sure that this is done right. Love it.
Bob, your process was wrong. Ha ha. Right. Like nobody wants to hear that, especially in accounting. We want to be right. Right. And so we have to research and say, and to take us, you can never learn anything until you're in a position to, even though we never say fail, but you're in a position where it could be wrong. And then you got to go face the music. And that's how you learn and evolve. And then you learn how to do it better the next time. But if you don't have to take the risk and you're not going to be held accountable for it, you will never take the chance and you'll never amount to anything because you're never going to try. And you got to be able to try.
Love it. Wow, we've talked through so many different things. And I know you guys actually help other firms through this.
Yes.
So can you tell us a little bit of how you guys do that?
Yeah. So, you know, you find your passion in a very unlikely way, like I said. And so, you know, we started Empower CPA, which is the shortcut of how to operate your firm more efficiently, how to execute change, how to maybe put this person into play inside your firm? And what does that playbook look like? And so again, this all started because when we started doing it, I kept saying, Glenn, who are the people I talk to? Are there groups that I can lean into? Are there masterminds? You know, can you go to a conference for the firm owner and I can go and learn, you know, what I should be doing? And so just kind of took all of our knowledge over the last 6 or 7 years and kind of created this, you know, the course that can help people go through it. And hopefully provide, you know, value so that you don't have to do some of the things that we did and provide those shortcuts.
And what was it called? Sorry.
Empower CPA.
Thank you. Empower CPA. And then the, because we touched on it earlier, and I want to make sure I don't want to misrepresent it. You also have the podcast that everyone can listen to as well, which I, as I said, I enjoyed it. So you want to tell us a little bit about their podcast?
So it's Empowering Entrepreneurs. And so we just, again, had this idea that we wanted to bring a sense of community around entrepreneurs. And it's a lonely world sometimes out there, as we could probably all relate to. And so just talking through everybody's journey and, you know, what it looks like and how, what did they learn and what shortcuts can they provide for maybe someone out there listening as well?
We've seen, you know, doing this for 33 years, you get to see so many clients, friends, customers, whatever, that it go through the struggle of, and there's no resource for them. Again, they're just isolated. And so, you know, there's a great idea to say, you know, why don't we do something where we can share this knowledge? Because it's not only fun, but it's really great to see. You want entrepreneurs to succeed. And if they can get that one nugget that'll help them keep going, because, you know, a lot of people give up and they should have just opened that next door, but they just don't have any more gas in the tank. But if they could just open that next door and go, oh my God, that's the shortcut, then that's it. So that was the whole reason behind that. And it's been just a wonderful listen to people's stories, because they're all very similar of what everybody has to go through, but they don't know that if they don't listen or try to acquire that knowledge.
Yeah. And I like too that you guys highlighted business problems. So even as I listened to different episodes on your podcast, I got to hear a little bit about your firm, which is what made me want to bring you onto the podcast here. But I also got to hear other things. And if I kept an open mind, I go, there's a parallel to that, to the way that I'm running my firm or what's happening in my firm. So yeah, loved your guys' podcast on that. If they want to get in touch with either of you to ask you questions about anything that you've discussed, how would we get in touch with you guys?
Yeah, so we're on LinkedIn. HarperCPAPlus.com is our CPA firm. EmpoweringEntrepreneurs.com is the podcast. And EmpowerCPA.io is for the Empower CPA modules.
Awesome. Well, thank you again. I really have enjoyed this. And I love that you guys weaved everything back. I heard you guys keep coming back to culture, culture, culture. And that is so important right now. So hopefully, if anything, I mean, there's so many takeaways. People just kind of go, I need to think about my firm's purpose and culture, because that's where we started. And I believe, as I believe you guys believe, that's the starting point. Because if you create something later, you can't go back and say, well, we're going to change our purpose, and now I got to change everything else too.
Exhausting. So really
start with purpose, create the culture. And then we gave a lot of tactics today on like, what are some of the things you need to look at?
Absolutely.
So thanks everyone out there for joining us for this edition of Transformation Talks. And thank you, Glenn and Julie, for sharing your transformation success and your own. Sounds like you even had individually some transformation journeys as you went through that. So thank encourage God. Everyone out there, if you're watching or listening today, visit us at the Center for Accounting Transformation, because we provide a lot of education and information about small firms, small businesses going through these transformational changes. And that website is www.improvetheworld.net. Thanks again for joining us, and hope to see you on the next Transformation Talks.
The Center for Accounting Transformation provides business professionals with a network for utilizing innovations that are ready for adoption, the training and resources necessary to apply those innovations, and an opportunity to engage the talent and community needed to further the pursuit of innovative accounting practices that drive responsible and mindful business performance. Find out more at our website, www.improvetheworld.net. And if you're interested in sharing your own transformation stories, please contact us there.
Thank you for listening to the CPA Trendlines podcast, a production of cpatrendlines.com, now available on iTunes. We hope you'll rate and review us wherever you find your podcasts to help other accountants find our show more easily. For more information, you can go to cpatrendlines.com.